Hello, everyone, and welcome to From Tip to Tail, a podcast dedicated to animal welfare. This podcast is sponsored by Cuddly. Cuddly is the only crowdfunding platform built specifically for animal welfare organizations worldwide. I'm Bridget.
And I'm Sydney. We've spent years working with animal rescues and have seen such amazing innovation, strength, and heart.
Having this personal connection with rescuers has made us more informed, grateful, and inspired. We hope by giving you an inside look, you will be too.
Today, we're going to be sitting down with Susan Taney, Director of Lost Dogs Illinois, a nonprofit organization with a mission to educate and empower owners with resources to locate their lost pets, reduce the number of strays in shelters, and provide the education their communities need to keep animals safe. From managing animal shelters to building entire rescue organizations, Susan has over 35 years of experience under her belt. That's why we were so excited to bring her on to talk about the changes in animal welfare over the decades, as well as how microchipping and keeping animals in their homes has a powerful impact on the world. If you like this episode, be sure to click that subscribe button to listen in on similar stories. Other than that, let's get started.
Susan, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Really wonderful. It feels like a fresh start. We're entering the new year in a big way. And I'm so excited that you're with us to kind of tell your story here. We always like to kind of roll back in time a little bit. So tell us, were you always a big animal lover and what brought you into animal welfare?
Well, I think I was. I think everybody is that gets into animal welfare. We all have very similar stories. I actually moved out to Boston with my husband, and I was supposed to transfer to Washington, D.C. for my job. And my husband says, let's really think about this. He goes, I think what we should do is we should have you give back to the community and you work in something that you love. And I said, all right, I'll do it. And I started working for an animal shelter in Upton, Mass. And then it went from there.
Okay, so that's like husband goals.
I was going to say, I love that.
Isn't it? I have to tell you. In fact, today is my husband's 65th birthday. He died 4 years ago. And I was really, really lucky to be married to him because he supported and he had a passion for animals too.
I'm so sorry for your loss, but I mean, he sounds like what we're all looking for. Yeah. What a wonderful partner. Yeah.
Well, I had a little checklist, you know. Yeah. He was a great partner. I was very lucky.
What did he do for work? Was he very fulfilled as well?
No. Well, he always wanted to do something that he loved what he did. He was in telecommunications, but I always thought that he should really, because he had such a business major and he was so good in business, I really thought he should be running a shelter because you also need to run that as a business. Sometimes think that he would have done a much better job than I did. But his goal was to keep the cash flow going in our household so we could have all these animals and do what I wanted to do.
So incredible. Well, so tell us, what was your experience like in running or working in a shelter and eventually managing it?
Well, you know, it was kind of, because my first shelter I worked at was actually what they call, back then in the old days, was a no-kill shelter. And no-kill shelter meant back then that you did not take any animals that were sick, or like our shelter took any dog under 6 years old. They had to be vaccinated, up to date. We never took hardly any animals from strays. And we actually had a surrender fee, $150 for a purebred and $75 for a non-purebred, a mixed breed. So that's what I was kind of introduced to. So I kind of thought, oh, well, you know, I guess maybe that goes, that's how it is. I really wasn't knowledgeable. Then I moved out to Wisconsin. And I actually took over a county shelter. And that's when my eyes opened up to realize we did have an overpopulation situation. I don't know. I just don't know how to explain it. It just kind of opened up my eyes.
I was with that initial shelter, the animals you didn't take in, those animals that were over six or maybe were sick, what do you know what happened to them or what?
I have no idea. I'm sure there were other shelters, but that was what they marketed. Mm-hmm. That was a big marketing tool back then. You know, and I feel bad because I really didn't understand the whole concept of animal welfare and what it encompassed. And then when I moved out to Wisconsin, in fact, I was actually, like I said, a county shelter that was north of Milwaukee. And it was also, we were very rural too. So that also, we were close to a metropolitan city, Milwaukee, but yet my county was rural. So I ran into a lot of different situations there, but I learned a lot. I had a very good mentor there and she was great. And then after that, I actually moved to back out east to Boston and started working for the MSPCA Nevins Farm and Equine Center. And that was actually Equine and Farm Animal Shelter. And then I worked there and then I became the manager. I was there, for 6 to 8 years. I was kind of getting burnt out. Back then, you did have to, you know, euthanize animals and for space in that. And it was just getting to be a little too much for me. And then I worked for Doberman Rescue. And then I started working with a beagle rescue. And we branched out from that the other beagle rescue and started our own. And then moved to Ohio and helped out a shelter there and then moved to Illinois. And I worked with some rescues and then started Lost Dogs of Wisconsin with 4 other women. And then because I was the only one that lived in Illinois, I thought, well, geez, maybe I better start something in Illinois. And that's when Lost Dogs Illinois started.
That's incredible. I think you mentioned it earlier, over 35 years of just straight animal welfare work, whether it be in shelters or rescue organizations. I was wondering, in that time, what's the biggest change that you've seen in animal welfare from that span of time? Because 35 years is quite a long time.
I was very lucky to work for the MSPCA. So back in the late 1990s, the AHA and PetSmart did a survey about what we could do different or how this whole process came through. We had so many myths during that time. And I was very lucky to work with an organization that really believes that everybody is good. And that's how we should approach adoptions. Don't try to find hurdles to make people not get a dog. Let's find ways to work with them to get a dog or a cat. So that really kind of really opened up my eyes, you know, about how, boy, we were really putting a lot of hurdles. You know, no adoption to children. Do not adopt out black cats at Halloween. My shelter in Wisconsin was closed 2 weeks before Christmas and 2 weeks after Christmas. Oh my God, you know, here we are, we're overpopulated and we're not taking in dogs and we're not letting them go out. And so there's been a lot of studies and research which kind of pull these myths aside and says, you know, we got to start looking forward and we need to change our attitudes, stop being so judgmental and work with people so we can get more animals into homes.
Absolutely. I mean, even just like the few things you touched on, I feel like we still see those myths really being perpetuated across a lot of animal shelters. I know for me, like I was told a lot of times, like I wasn't even involved in animal welfare. I was like a child and like told that people would do terrible things to black cats around Halloween. Like I had black cats and we hid ours during Halloween.
Right. My mom would say, bring Rocky in. It's Halloween or it's getting close to Halloween. And
yeah. Or you can't bring a pet home during Christmas because there's so much going on in that stuff. Well, you know, you deal with that. You work around it. I just really kind of have to, or even you have to have a fenced yard. You have to, large dogs cannot be in an apartment. Well, there are some dogs who are really laid back. They can be fine. They can be in an apartment and you can take them out and walk them. It's kind of like, I wonder where the policy where I remember that you could not adopt a dog out to a family that had a child 4 years and older. And I'm sitting there thinking, we had puppies and dogs when I was a kid, you know, and I think we just have to kind of look back at what happened in our lives. I guess what I'm just saying, just we need to walk back in our shoes, take a breath, look back at how we were brought up and not put up these hurdles and these walls that so many people do.
Absolutely. Adapt to the times.
Right. We have that research out there. I mean, there's It's not just gut feeling, it's actual studies and research now.
Well, right. And I feel like these myths are going to continue on until you have those other cases where you're adopting out to a family with kids and you see how happy that dog is and you see that they're perfectly fine and you're adopting out a black cat and it just happened to be Halloween and the cat's perfectly happy and fine. Like, you can't break the myths without like stepping into that zone of like quote unquote risk.
Well, you know, and the same thing happens with lost dogs. When we first started our Facebook page, we'd really have to monitor because people would see maybe a dog that was really matted or skinny. And the first thing they'd say, this dog should not go back to the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible owner, why are we even posting this page? You know, I mean, posting this picture. And we'd have to go back and educate them and tell them, you know, this dog could have been out for a really long time.
Right.
This dog could be a senior. I mean, if you were to see my 17-year-old Chihuahua, you can see the top of his spine. I mean, he's an old dog and he has cataracts. That picture's only a millisecond. We don't know what the background is. We don't know what's going on beyond that millisecond of a photo. But people just feel like they need to comment and be very judgmental. And that's why we have a non-judgmental page. If people make disparaging comments, they are eliminated. And if they continue, we will ban them. We actually have Facebook rules. We're very tight on that because we want our page to be very positive because not all stray dogs are homeless. They just need to go back home.
I saw that. That's your tagline, right?
Yeah. My friend Cara made that up. I like that. But it is. I mean, it's a really a hard thing to get that through the people. But now what happens is if someone makes a comment, it isn't us who's moderating it. It's our fans who comment and say, you know, hey, you really don't know what the backstory is on this animal.
I love that. I love when it's those people that step up and they're kind of, you know, because you set such a good example, they can then be that influence and set examples for others.
Right. We have approximately 156,000 fans. And it's amazing to see, you know, and we get to know a lot of them, you know. They keep posting and, you know, are messaging us and that, and they're great. And that's what we were trying to do with Lost Dogs Illinois. We want to teach people how to fish. That's why we have a website with free resources. We have articles on, you know, what to do if your dog is lost from a car accident, if it's lost in a rural area, if the dog is just newly adopted. We have these articles, and then we also have tips that we post to our page. Like just 3 days ago, I posted, you know, to watch out for thin ice. You need to be your dog's advocate. Keep them on a leash. You know, and we have, you know, we share these posts, like for fireworks, you know, New Year's Eve, you know, keep your pets safe. Or, you know, if you have a sighting, you know, don't post on a Facebook page because usually what will happen is everybody will go out to look for your dog and then your dog runs away.
Mm.
So you want to keep those secret.
Mm-hmm.
We want this to be an educational page. And what's happened in Illinois is that we have different small groups that help people. We have a small group, I think they're Will County or Kane County, I can't remember, South Chicago. It's about four or five women who help people with their lost dogs. And there's groups like this all over. So that was part of our goal. Was to educate people and to work together as a community to get lost dogs home.
It's so remarkable too, because you're naming off things that from an outside perspective, I wouldn't assume a dog is going to be lost. Not such like a car accident. Like, of course, a dog's going to panic and get lost in so many situations. And I feel like that's what's so special about the page too. I mean, you have this amazing, empathetic community of so, so many people. So like that enough is like, enough to boost your spirit. But then also, I mean, there's been a million situations where every pet owner at one point ends up losing their dog, I feel like. And to have that support system that is able to step in and be like, okay, here's step one. That sounds amazing.
I love that too. I love that you have it on your website and you have it available to people. Cause I remember the first time I lost my dog, Ben. He was an escape artist and he just somehow found his way outside of my house. I like to think of myself as someone who's pretty prepared for a lot of situations. A lot of situations. I was, you know, a vet tech for a while. So it's, I thought I was very prepared. But in that instance, when I lost him, every bit of knowledge that I had in my head, every step that someone had told me previously just went out the door, and it was just frantic. Having that space where you have those steps and you can have people go and look and see what to do is really incredible. Because in those moments, you know, everything's up in the air.
I actually, oh God, this is 13 years ago. I had two dogs go missing from two different vet clinics from two different cities. And the first, it was my beagle who went missing from my own vet clinic. And I was on my way to go to, you know, HSUS lobby days that they, I don't know if they have them anymore, but we were on our way to Springfield. And my vet called and says, oh my God, Susan, your dog has escaped. And we can't get a hold of your husband. And I go, oh God, here I am 6 hours away. We drove back, but it was like, I lost everything that I knew, like you said, went out. And then 2 months later, my foster dog at another vet clinic escaped. Now, my first dog, we were able to lure in with another beagle. My foster dog, it took us 30 days to trap.
Mm-hmm.
So it's two completely different situations. It was mistakes. One of the girls, I mean, she was walking on ice, slipped, the leash went up. The other one, actually, the kid was texting and the slip lead went loose and she went out. That could have been preventable.
But these things happen.
Exactly. And I think that's what we all have to realize is that accidents happen. And, you know, like my husband always used to say, my yard looked like Fort Knox. But that didn't help in the situation when they escaped from the vet clinic.
Right.
So I think that we all need to take a step back, take a breath and just say, you know, we're here to help. You know, we're not going to judge on how the dog went missing.
Yeah, it cuts some people some slack. You could be the most prepared person in the world and these things can still happen to you.
Exactly.
I feel like you're your own worst critic too. Like, and mom guilt is so real, even with animals. Like, I can only imagine in that moment, even though it was at a vet clinic, or even though your dog was the one who like found their way out, it's like, I'm a terrible pet parent right now. And that's all you're thinking. So if you come to a community that's like, you're a terrible pet parent, it's just reaffirming that like, oh no, that's what I thought.
Yeah. But I was very lucky because I did kick in, you know, after I kind of calmed down, all my senses came back and I was able to get everything going, got friends and to help me. And the flyers were the number one, both dogs' flyers were the number one reason why I got them home.
So, I mean, I do want to touch on, because I think all of us, especially after being in animal welfare and especially living on social media, like I feel like we all do, we see these people who attack. And there are so many things that are just reduced to one image, one small video, and it makes it just so apt for like misinterpretation. So I'm wondering, I mean, you've built this amazing community that at this point, it seems like is almost like fully functioning on its own. They're defending each other and things like that. But how did that really take root? And I mean, were you out in the community or how did you really grow as a page itself to be able to help your community?
Well, you know, 10 years ago, Facebook was different. You could really increase a page. And now it's really hard. I guess algorithms, I don't understand this. This is all above my head in that. But we're not able to grow. But I don't know. I think it was just that we were positive. We kept posting why we were here. The Facebook page was started in 2010. We were incorporated in 2011. And then we got our 501c3 in 2011. And our first free microchip clinic was actually in 2012. And I think that helped a lot because we were going out into the community. We also, you know, got a grant from Petco for $3,000 to buy an ID engraving machine. So when we went to the microchip clinics, we also could engrave ID tags for everybody. You know, those are the two most important things on, you know, to get your having an up-to-date ID tag and a microchip that's registered to you. And that's the one thing that was important to us, that these had to be registered to you and it was free registration.
Love that you mentioned that, because so many animals would come in, so many people would find lost dogs and come into the hospital that I used to work at, and they would have a microchip and everyone would get so excited. You know, this dog is registered. We would look up the number, call Avid or whoever owned that microchip, and would find out that the person who microchipped the dog did not register it. So essentially that microchip does nothing. And it was just heartbreaking every time.
But you know what? Now we have microchip hunters, which is a part of our Lost Dogs Illinois group. They're really amazing. They are investigators. What they do is, so like they would probably call up Avid and ask who the implant facility is. And then let's say it was a rescue, then they call the rescue and ask if they've got the information, because they're depending on the owner to register that animal. But think about when you adopted a dog, you're all excited, you know, and everything, and you want to get this dog home. You got your pile of papers because they're giving you 6,000 pages to read, you know, all the vet records. That kind of gets shoved back. So that's how come we really encourage rescues, shelters, vet clinics to make sure they're registered before they leave the facility.
I love that. Microchip hunters.
Yeah. We actually have a very good relationship with the Chicago Animal Care and Control. We're trying to expand this because these people are amazing. Jeanette Garlow is the head of Lost Dogs Illinois Microchip Hunters. And I mean, we have gotten dogs that, or cats that the phones had been disconnected and they just kept researching and researching. They get Facebook, they have white pages. They'll get a hold of an aunt, the aunt will get a hold of a cousin. They go right down the line, and they have reunited dogs that have been missing for 13, 12 years or 6 months. And I think what people, and I really wanted to bring this up because this is about Bobby, who was a dog who was 13 years old. The dog went missing. The had an old rabies tag. Now the landline was disconnected. They didn't have it registered in the CACC files. And I might have this story wrong. So they were able to find out what vet clinic the rabies tags were given to, you know, and that. She was able to find Bobby's owner, and she had a landline. But she didn't have an internet and she didn't have a cell phone. So I think sometimes we have to think about there are people that just do not have any of these technical tools. But she was able to find, you know, Bobby's owner. And Bobby was 13 years old. He needed to go back to his owner.
Oh my gosh.
We just had somebody from Oklahoma. And the lady had said, you know, the vet said that the chip was not registered. And I said, well, send it to us anyway. Well, the chip was registered and it was updated November 1st. And we found the owners. They had been missing for 3 months. The dog had been.
Aww.
So sometimes if you, even the vet says the chip is not registered or phone line is disconnected, get that microchip number, send it in to us. I mean, we are a national organization. Actually, Marilyn Litt, who's the director of Lost Dogs of Texas, actually is the head of Microchip Hunters, while Jeanette's the director for the Midwest. And Marilyn actually did microchip hunting for Katrina, the hurricane Katrina. And so now we develop it into our program. It's amazing. We have about a 66% rate finding these dogs with disconnected rabies tags, microchips, and that.
That's incredible. When you're talking about too, like they don't have a social media presence. They don't have a computer. They're not online. And it's like, and they don't have like a landline. It's like, how are you even, are you writing them a letter? Like, this is incredible. Like, it must be so satisfying to reunite these animals who, I mean, years have been missing. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? It's kind of funny. I was talking to Jeanette before the podcast and I said, you know, I was looking at back the old reunions and that, and I just started crying.
Oh yeah.
Because some of these people really don't have the resources or the ability to, well, you know, there's some people don't even have a car when they're in a metro area. You're supposed to take a pit bull and a bus for them to claim. A lot of these people have two jobs and a shelter's only open for certain hours. How are they supposed to get their dogs? You know, some of these people live paycheck to paycheck. We need to be accessible for them to get their lost pets home. There needs to be so many different changes. And I know that's going to be a process, take time, but really so many of these dogs don't need a new home. They just need to go home. And we need, in animal welfare, to do a better job.
I love that. And I love that you're coming from a place of so much knowledge, from inside information into like the difficulties people were experiencing as far as like in shelters. And you're like, hey, you know what's a really simple way to solve this? Just keep animals in their homes.
Right. We also, this year, the last 2 years, we've been donating microchip scanners to police departments, because we figure if they can scan and get those lost dogs home before they go to the shelter, we're making more room in the shelter. And then we also help people with their reclaim fees. Because sometimes, like I said, people work, you know, live from paycheck to paycheck, you know, having to shell out $100, $200, $300. That's a lot of money. We do that. And we also, our microchip hunters, Danette has made this her goal, is that if the people are having difficulty registering their chip, Jeanette will do it. She always makes sure that the chip is registered. Because sometimes, you know, like I said, they don't have the internet to get on there to register their chip. Or they don't have, you know, some chips, you know, you have to pay a fee to register. So we'll pay for that fee.
As far as like your microchip hunters, you said that that's a nationwide support, or is that just something that's, and that's, oh, I knew you said that. That's incredible. No matter what state you're in.
Yes. We have, it's called microchiphelp.com.
Wow. I love that so much.
Yeah. And we really want to grow that. But I, you know, I sometimes think we were kind of talking about, oh, how can we grow it? Sometimes we think, is it shelters thinking that we're saying they're not doing a good job? Well, we understand that shelters are understaffed. That sometimes these chips take a full day of look, you know, trying to find families. Well, they could be doing something else. Why not give it to volunteers who have been trained and who have the time to do it? Or we'll, shelters can get their own volunteers and we'll teach them how to do it. So it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting too, because we've had a few like really progressive shelters come on the podcast. And it sounds like the first step for all of them is like, hey, when you pick up a dog, don't just instantly bring it to the shelter. Take a second, scan the microchip, because chances are that house, that dog lives two houses down.
I say, if you don't have a microchip scanner, go to a local vet animal hospital. They have them there. They will, you can easily call an animal hospital and say, hey, I found a lost dog. Can I bring him in or her in to get scanned? And they'll do it for you.
Exactly. And we even have fire departments, police departments. We actually have a lot of people that have purchased their own scanners. And they will, someone, you know, on the page, because we also have neighborhood Facebook pages and that. And they'll sit there and say, hey, is someone available to go over to 50th and, you know, Grant to scan this dog? And then if they're having issues on finding the owner, they'll contact us and we can help. So there's a lot of ways that we can work together on getting lost dogs home. We just got to be innovative, you know, think, you know, what can we do better? How can we get these dogs home?
Right. It's so wonderful what you're doing. And I love that you're coming at it with such a wonderful attitude and sense of empathy and understanding for people of all like economic situations, because we've talked about this in the past too, where like people want pets and they're going to find a way to have a pet. And you know what? Maybe they don't have the most amazing fence. Maybe they're in an apartment, but that doesn't mean it should limit their lifestyle so that they don't have an animal that they love and care for, especially when there's such a large problem of overpopulation.
Well, you know, and I think the thing is too, I would really suggest if people would volunteer one day at a clinic, meet these people, talk to them. It's amazing. I was at this one clinic and this family was there, and it was about seven people, and they each had a dog. And I said, whoa, you know, and I go, wow, you guys got a lot of dogs. And I said, well, you know what? We take care of our community. We've had some people go back to Mexico. We've had some people that had health problems, and we took their dogs in.
Aww.
And, you know, and I'm sitting here going, I don't think people realize that they really do take care of their community. But a lot of times in these communities, these dogs aren't microchipped, they're not spayed and neutered. And that's where we come in with our clinics. We're not actually doing clinics anymore. What we're doing is providing the chips, because we have a small volunteer force. And it was real, I have to admit, it was burning us out in that. So we decided to go a different route. And that route was to provide the chips to different smaller clinics and that stuff. But if we can get these chips registered to them, we can get them vaccinated. That helps just that first step. And it makes them easier for them to maybe go and have something does happen to their puppy, a major expense, they're able to afford that. Or, you know, make a payment plan, but we've taken care of the minor. That adds up. Some vets charge $50 to $75 to put in a microchip.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's before any registration fee or
exam fee or anything.
Yeah. Well, so I know you have to have so, so many success stories of animals being reunited, but I know you said you were just looking at your page. Is there one story that kind of like pops out to you that like still gets you?
The dog's name was Marley. And Marley was a Pekingese Shih Tzu. I think it was a Shih Tzu. And it went through the polar vortex. It went missing in February 2014. And it was found in October. And it was a hot mess, a real hot mess. And it went to the animal control facility, and they misread the numbers and said, there's not even a microchip with that number in it, or it was something to that effect. So it went to a rescue, Making a Difference rescue, and they scanned the dog and got the right chip number, and they got the owner's name. And they'll even admit, they go, well, we were kind of taken back. You know, this dog looked pretty bad and rough shape, you know, and that stuff. But she goes, we decided to call. Well, the lady says, oh my God, Bobby's been missing since February. And this is October. And she goes, I just had a baby yesterday. And she signed herself out of the hospital and went and picked up her dog.
That's dedication. Yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you kind of, you know, here, I mean, everything was against her. Think about it. The microchip was read wrong. They wrote down the wrong numbers. Everybody had a preconceived attitude about the dog, that it was really in rough shape. Oh my God, we should not give that dog back, you know, and that stuff. And found out the backstory. Found out that was a love. And they're still in contact with this family. And then, can I share one other story?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially since it's winter, we had a 5-pound Chihuahua survive 5 days in the woods in 0-degree weather. And how they found the dog was somebody was walking their dog and they heard this. And they looked underneath that. It was buried underneath a log and it had an ID tag. And everybody thought, oh, no way this dog is going to live. This dog is not going to live at all. And it survived 5 days.
Oh my gosh.
So never underestimate a dog's ability to survive.
I love a good story, right? And I feel like it would just be so tragic. A dog survives the 5 days or from February to October, only for it to lose out once it got to the shelter.
Right.
That would be the ultimate heartbreaking moment, finding that out.
The one I want to share, his name was Azul. And Azul was a pit bull. And I'll try to shorten up the story. I'll make it short. We came in and we found actually the owner and the owner's. It was the owner's son, and he was in the military overseas. And the girlfriend was supposed to have taken care of the dog. Well, she didn't. But the family really wanted Azul back. But Azul had sarcoptic mange, and they had an elderly relative living in their house. There was no way they could take it. So we begged the animal control facility to please treat it, keep it. We'll try to find a rescue to take the dog. Well, we were not getting any rescues to take a dog, take Azul. So I get the email from the director and says, Susan, we're going to have to euthanize Azul. We just can't keep him any longer. And I said, well, what time? She goes, in an hour. I said, oh, crap. I finally got a hold of Heather, who's one tail at a time. And she has a group called CRISP, which is an organization that helps people who are surrendering their dogs to have them stay in the shelter or stay with the family. And I said, you've got to help us with this dog. You just have to help us. Well, she started getting everything arranged, and I'm watching the minutes going down, and I'm going, oh, crap. Now, I lived an hour and a half outside of Chicago, and I said, if I have to, I'm driving in. I called up my own vet, and I said, will you quarantine this dog until I could get it to a vet? That he says, well, we'll take care of it. I mean, I was just like a mad woman, and so was Jeanette. And finally, Heather got it all organized, and we got him into the vet clinic, and Azul's owner or the father went and visit him every day. Had on the plastic gloves and everything. And Chris paid for 6 weeks of the treatment. I think it was 6 weeks. I could be wrong, and Jeanette and I went out. They invited us after Azul had been home for a few months. They invited Jeanette and I over for dinner. And Jeanette just told me today, she goes, I heard from Azul's owners, he's still doing great.
Aww.
That really got to me. That was a real culmination of everybody working together to make this work. The vet clinic, CACC, I really understand that they were under a time, constraints. My vet, the other vet, Heather working, we all really worked together and we got that dog, back to its rightful home.
It sounds like one of those situations too that I think a lot of people can misunderstand. When someone's like, listen, I can't take the animal back into the home right now, but the love is still 100% there. And like the dedication is still there. It's just life sometimes poses too big of an obstacle. And so the fact that everyone came together in this amazing way, and now this dog is being loved by the family that's meant to be caring for him. It's so amazing.
And I love that they still keep in contact with Jeanette. It's really cool. Jeanette keeps in contact with a lot of people because of this whole, they all do, all the volunteers do that are working specifically in Microchip Hunters. And even our volunteers, I completely forgot to say this. Every single post, there's a human behind it. So, we're not bots. Right before this podcast, I got off my shift. I posted lost and found dogs. And that means, and if they don't have an intersection, we contact them for the intersection. If we don't have a picture, we contact for the picture. We always want to make sure that we have the right information. And we also, after we post them, we send them a flyer. We send them a text what to do. And we also send them a text about the scammers. Because scammers are just notorious. They're disgusting. And we always tell them, if you need help, to please contact us.
Ugh.
So we're not, it's not an automatic post. There are actual humans that are behind each post. So our messages are monitored by our volunteers and our comments are.
And doing such a holistic support system. I mean, my gosh, that's what everyone needs. That's incredible.
And we have incredible volunteers. They're great. They're really great. All ages. I'm the oldest volunteer. And I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but probably guess. And down to, in their early 20s. And you know what else about that? Oh, God, I told you I could gab. That people want to help. But a lot of people don't want to go into shelters. It's really, really hard for some people. Mm-hmm. First of all, some of the dogs may not be they might be too big for someone to walk, or they, depressed going into the shelter. So this is a great outlet for people to volunteer. You're helping people, but you're behind a computer and a Facebook, but you're able to reach out and you're able to make a difference.
So wonderful. So we always like to do some kind of fun questions here. So I have to ask, what is the naughtiest thing you've ever had an animal or seen or had an animal do?
I express their anal sex at my forehead.
No. That was a really quick answer.
Yeah. That is the worst.
Well, if you worked at a vet clinic,
it's super gross, but one of our vet techs, he did that and he had his mouth open.
Oh.
Yeah. I still remember that day so vividly. It's nasty business.
Yes, it is. very nasty.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to be sick. That is Sydney. How have we known each other this long and I haven't heard that story?
Oh, I try not to think about it.
Oh my gosh. So the next question I have to say, because you've name dropped a lot of organizations, but I have to wonder, are there any specific organizations that you have like really big, like animal welfare organizations, I should say, that you have like a big crush on the work they're doing?
Oh God, that's really hard to say.
I know. Sophie's Choice.
Well, I have a real affinity for equine and farm animal shelters because I think they kind of get lost in the shuffle. You know, I think a lot of times people just think of cats and dogs. So I guess the MSPCA, Devon's Farm and Equine Center, I have a, even though I worked for them, they're near and dear to my heart. They really are.
Mm, so special. Yeah, I know. The work they do, it is, you'd think they'd get all the appreciation because horses and farm animals are so wonderful. And I feel like everyone's so excited to see them. But yeah, I think they do get lost in the shuffle a little bit.
They do.
It's becoming, because now there's more farm sanctuaries. You see them cropping up, or there's a lot like the one in, it's called a farm sanctuary. What's that? The one in Woodstock, New York? I can't remember, but.
Oh, I do know what you're talking about. I'm at a blank on their name though.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? And I went there for a workshop. I can't even think of it. Oh, you make me feel good that you're so young and you have a blank.
Because I remember the city Woodstock and I was like, oh, yeah. it's a cute little city. But I do remember, I'll look it up after this.
Okay.
Well, our last question is a little bit hard too, but we always like to ask if there's one quote, mantra, motto that you kind of carry with you doing this work that you do.
There's several, strengthening the human animal bond, keeping families together, and not all stray dogs are homeless. I think those are it.
Amazing.
Those are great ones.
Yeah. And I feel like it's something that we're all learning and learning more as time goes on. I mean, I think they resonate with you initially, and then the closer you get in animal welfare, the more amazing bonds that you see how deep it can go. It's really astounding.
Thank you.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for chatting with us. This has been incredible.
Mm-hmm.
We feel so lucky to have snagged you.
Let me say this. I'm just a little small cog in this whole field. And I'm very lucky to have a lot of mentors and a lot of people who support Lost Dogs Illinois and Lost Dogs of America too. I'm actually co-director of that. You know, hopefully this will continue on.
Absolutely. It was truly such an honor to be able to chat with Susan. We know she's going to be retiring soon, although I think it's going to be hard for her to stay retired at this rate. It's incredible to think that she's been able to mentor so many people over the past few years, and we're sure that some amazing things are going to come out of it. If you're interested in learning a little bit more about Lost Dogs Illinois, you can check our show notes or our blog.
And as always, remember to rate, like, and subscribe to this podcast. And be sure to follow Cuddly on all social media accounts at We Love Cuddly. That's CUDDLY. Thanks, guys.